All right, let's go ahead and get started here. My name is Chris Sheaves. I work at SmartFile. And today we're going to talk about using MooseFS to tame your big storage needs. So I work at SmartFile. We're an online storage company. And actually, I'm going to first tell a little bit more about myself. I've been doing IT operations for 14 years. This is my third Linux Fest. I was here back in 2004. That's actually when I was first getting into Linux and just was using it as a database server. And I came here and saw that, hey, you can use it with ham radios and PBXs and just anything you can imagine. That's what really turned me on to, yeah, this is definitely what I want to get involved with and work on in my careers, because it's just so flexible. So I really enjoyed coming here, and this is a great venue to learn a lot about different ways to use Linux. I'm a Red Hat certified engineer. I've worked with companies, anything from startups. SmartFile's a startup. I've worked at a couple other ones, all the way up to Fortune 10 companies. I've had a lot of variety of seeing anything from, hey, we have a few hard drives, let's throw them together because we need some space, all the way up to multi-million dollar SAN implementations that these corporations will spend buku money on, and they still have the same storage issues that any small startup has. So it's pretty interesting how people, hey, just because you have more money doesn't mean you're getting that much better of a product. Familiar for storage with Samba, NFS, iSCSI, Serial ATA over Ethernet, fiber connectivity. So I've set up and installed all those different types of solutions just depending upon the end user need. So let's talk a little bit more about SmartFile. SmartFile is online file storage company. We do FTP access, web access, API access. So our storage needs are a little bit different. We need to be able to scale very easily and quickly for our end user base. So, and it's just static storage. Our actual bottleneck is basically the end user's internet connection. We're not worried about real-time applications. During this testing, I wasn't worried about virtualization or anything like that. I just needed to store static files to be read from every now and then. So first thing we need is reliability out of your storage. I mean, if you don't have reliability, you got squat for your, especially when it comes to storage. It's not like you can just reboot and get that system back up and running. No, if you lose customer files, they tend to get upset with you. Next thing, I needed a large storage capacity. So at the time, I started doing all this testing about a year ago. We were around 150 terabytes available, and I needed to be able to scale up to a petabyte, petabyte and a half, with using effectively the same process without having to just do a lot of rework or anything like that. I wanted a good path for scalability. I needed, obviously, redundant copies of customer data, because even Google says you should have 3 copies of your data. So generally, live data, backup, and then live data, a backup, and then a second cold backup. They did a white paper on this a number of years ago, and actually MIT agreed with them. I mean, you should have 3 copies of your data. Something you're going to notice that I don't have in this presentation is IO charts. A concern for us, as I said, the internet on the client side is what is the slowest part of the system. So IO speed was not a concern for us. Whether it's IOPS, reads, or writes, for us, it was kind of like whatever. I just made sure, hey, does it work? Does the application hang or anything? Are we having any slowdowns? And kind of by thumb, I didn't, oh, this one's 10% more IO. It didn't really matter because, like I said, we're not running real-time applications or VMs or databases or anything like that. Needed to be cost-effective, aka cheap. Like I said, I mean, you deal with these multi-million-dollar SAN units. Hey, to add 100 gigabytes of storage, you're looking at anywhere from $500 to $800 a drive. I mean, it gets expensive. And then you start talking about additional enclosures and additional SAN connectivity for fiber backend, and your costs just keep keep growing. And there's no way we're going to be able to charge a client, oh, you guys want to use this online backup? Okay, it's only going to be $500 per gigabyte once you add on our cost and then our profit margin. So we could not realistically do that. And I'm going to touch on again, reliable. You have to know that your storage is going to stay up and not ever lose data for you. This is our green box. We've got an example of it over in our booth. They're 4U tall. They just sit on static rails. It's the most hard drives you can stick into a 4U chassis and it be a server. So a lot of vendors sell a 4U box with hard drives, but they're generally JBODs with no compute equipment in the back. So you've got to hook that up into an extra server. So you're running up actually 5U then for that storage space. And what gets interesting about that is, so my system design is for a 42U rack. At 4U, I can get 9 of these into the rack, 4U for servers and 2U for switches. That 5th U, it obviously throws all my numbers out. So it was real important to stay with the 4U size. This is a picture of the box. This is actually an older revision than what's over there. Has a single corded power supplies. Obviously, it's all opened up with no hard drives. Currently, we're running 2 terabyte drives. We can upgrade those at any point. And some of you will recognize this is actually the Backblaze storage pod design. So we kind of took what they had and ran with it. The software stack we were running on these boxes, CentOS 5.6 when I started. We were running software RAID 6s with 8 drives, 2 of those per system. So what would happen is those RAID arrays were so big, they would literally take days and days. I'm talking five days to rebuild a RAID array. And on top of that, anytime we're running software RAID, the software RAID would come back and say, hey, I need to recheck this RAID for consistency. You always immediately knew when that was happening because the application would just take a nosedive. I mean, it would function, but you absolutely knew that one of these arrays were getting rebuilt because it was so slow. But that was the setup that they had. Running DRBD we had 4 boxes with 2 sets of them each for the failover active passive, pushing out NFS over a VIP. So our application would talk to the VIPs through NFS, and then the failover process was unruly. There was just a lot of problems with this setup. It worked for up to the point where we were, but there was no way that this solution was going to scale for us. So this was actually one of the first things I did when I joined SmartFile is review this and see what options we had. So 3 projects enter, 1 project leaves. The 3 projects, Ceph, GlusterFS, and Moose File System. My test, there was no real, I was just, hey, let's see what these projects do. These are the kind of the ones that I picked out that I thought would do the best job for us. From a testing perspective, I tested each one for about 2 weeks individually. This including installing it multiple times. You can always get something installed the first time, even if you get lucky. But if you can install it 2 or 3 times, okay, then you're starting to know what's going on and how the system interacts and works. Once the cluster was up and running, I would do server fails. I was doing all this virtually. I'd yank hard drives out, plug them back in, fail them, put replacement drives in, anything I can do in a general maintenance schedule. And then I would start shutting down random servers. I mean, everybody has their preferred way that you're supposed to bring a cluster down. So I would intentionally not do that just to see how it would respond, because in a production environment, you can't always guarantee that stuff's going to come down in the recommended way. So I would be pulling plugs on servers and just terrorizing each of these. Once I had all 3 of them running, our application were able to mount different file storages on the back end. So I actually had 3 different users that would talk to each one of these for their file storage, so we could actually then integrate the application and see how the application would work with each of these file storage to see if there's any big hiccups or exceptions or anything that our internal application didn't like for these. So Ceph 4.7.2, like I said, I did this about a year ago, so they're actually up to like .6 something. So what I'm going to say is not necessarily as of today, but this is just what I found while testing. Pros of this system: it's truly distributed. It does use metadata, but that's distributed amongst the cluster, which is really, really cool. So you've got a truly, truly distributed system with no single points of failure. Something that's also really awesome about it is you've got API access. So for example, they have S3 type API endpoints, which is very interesting that you can use that to access your data. It's nice to have that flexibility with those guys, especially the fact that we've got an application running specifically against that. We could have used those APIs if we wanted to instead of writing through the Fuse file system. The cons I ran into with Ceph, I had a lot of problems setting it up. It was just a lot going on, and there's just a lot of moving pieces. Secondly, at least for this revision, I had tons and tons of stability issues. I couldn't run this thing for maybe but 2 days before something would happen. I couldn't access my data, or the servers would just decide, hey, I don't want to be in the cluster anymore. So I was really on board. I mean, Ceph was kind of my front runner when I first gathered my data. But after my testing, I was like, I wasn't so hot on him. Secondly, Gluster 3.2.6, big pros of these guys, basically Red Hat backs them. So obviously any Red Hat stuff, they do a lot of testing with and works real well. Secondly, the geoclusters, that's a pretty cool feature as far as distributed data centers. From a centralized management point, that's always something you want, data center to data center replication. So that's Gluster's pretty good for that. I did like it. The cons I ran into. So the bricks, Gluster calls their storage nodes bricks. You always have to do them in pairs. So it's very, very RAID 1-ish. So due to pairing everything in two, so the problem that presented for me was I'm running 2 terabyte hard drives right now. If I want to upgrade to 3 terabytes and I put a 3 terabyte in there, okay, I got to find its matching pair and replace both of them, even if only one of them went out. So either I'm replacing additional hardware or I'm wasting disk space. Same way, just in general with the bricks themselves, I could run nine storage nodes, but one would effectively be wasted. I'd have to only run 8. So that was a real knock that I didn't like, is I needed that additional flexibility to grow, and then from a maintenance perspective long term, I wanted that flexibility and ease to do that. So finally, Moose 1.6.2.4 version. Things I liked about Moose: like I said, flexible scaling and the maintenance of the boxes. Secondly, ease of use and install. It's strictly 1 RPM per component, and then some flat text files. What's interesting about that is I've read some online reviews, and there is a couple guys who are really, really knocking Moose because, well, it's just flat configuration files. It's too confusing. These configuration files are maybe 40 lines, with most of them commented out because you can use the defaults. So give me VI any day of the week over some GUI, web, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I mean, just give me the flat file, and I can edit it. And not only does that make my job easier from an administration standpoint, but then from a automated deployment standpoint, text files are obviously always easier and a ton better to work with. So, but it's not all unicorns and rainbows. A big con is the meta. So Moose uses metadata also, but it's a master server that holds all the metadata on it. So you've got this big, ugly single point of failure, which nobody likes dealing with. And secondly, you can get paid for support for Moose, but there's no big commercial backers like Red Hat or anything like that. So what that means is the dev mailing list is a little bit lighter, releases aren't nearly as fast. But in the end, I decided I can mitigate the single point of failure issue by using UCARP and VIPS. I can't mitigate stability issues, and I can't mitigate the RAID 2 thing with GlusterFS. So that was the big reasons why I went ahead and went with Moose. So, chosen Moose at this point for our solution. The big Moose features, any native file system, ext3, 4, XFS, ZFS for underlying, it'll run on top of. Secondly, in copies of data replication. So you can actually set the number of copies of individual files to whatever you want. And so let's say you've got master directory, you want everything with 2 copies. You can go into that directory and set other directories within it to 3 copies. So you can stagger, depending upon how important your data is, how many copies you want. And it's really, Moose makes that really easy. There's a command to see the number of replicas and then a command to set it. Pretty simple. There's a trash bin for Moose, so by default it keeps the files for a day. If you come back and decide, hey, I want this file back, you can get on your master server and then get that data restored. So that's built in. You can change that time period easily, just as easy as you set the number of data replication. Snapshots, make snapshot. Very, very easy. So that's all, like I said, this is still all at Moose layer, application layer. OpenStack and OpenNebula both support Moose. I found that out actually after the fact. I didn't even realize that those guys did support Moose for their backends. So that was real interesting. And then very flexible scaling. So you can add, so once you've got a cluster up and running, you can add additional nodes all the way across. Or you can add, as you've if you've seen our box, there we've got open slots, so we can add additional hard drives. We've got 2 or 3 terabyte drives in there now. We could add 4 terabyte drive hard drives in there. If our 2 terabyte hard drives fail, I can pull that out and put a 4 terabyte hard drive in there. In 2 years when there's, I don't know, 6 terabyte hard drives, we don't ever have to worry about matching up or having this big inventory on our back end because this stuff gets old. No, you can always put that additional storage into the cluster. And Moose always automatically recognizes it. You don't have to tell Moose, hey, this is a bigger drive. It just reads the disk size and goes, hey, you got a whole bunch more drive space here. Awesome. So that was something that I really, really liked about it. It eases not just install, but then long-term maintenance. It really is beneficial there. Moose components, there's four main pieces of Moose. You've got your master, which holds all of your metalogging data, and then it's everything. Everything will communicate through, talk to the master first. So chunk servers talk to it to say, hey, where do I put data? Clients will talk to it to say, hey, where do I get data from? There's a CGI piece, so from a web, it's just a little integrated web server. You can either run it integrated on itself, which is what I do, or you can put it behind Apache or Nginx or whatever other type of web server you want. I actually run it on the master, so it just kind of is all right there. The Metalogger. So, as I said, the metadata is, if you lose your metadata, you're done. You've lost all of your data at that point. So the Metalogger actually talks to the master and pulls that data back real time. So as information is getting updated on the master, Metalogger is keeping that data for itself. So using UCARP, then you can fail over between the two servers and get that information back up and running on the Metalogger so you don't have a real big issue. Chunk servers, that's your typical storage box. That's an example of what we've got out there. The master CGI and Metalogger, I'm running just those in virtualization, and those are fine. And then the chunk server just hosts your data as you would expect. And then finally, clients. You've got to have clients that talk to Moose, or it's not really doing much for you. Moose setup, like I said, Moose setup is pretty straightforward. You set up your UCARP and VIP on your master, install the RPM. There's an MFS master file. All you're doing there really is telling it what user to run the daemon under and what your data path is. And the rest of it is literally defaults. And you tell it what the master FQDN is. exports, that's a file just like, if you're familiar with the NFS exports, really, really similar. You set your IP, your path, all that stuff. One thing I do want to note too, so RPM Forge hosts the RPMs, but they're a version behind, so I personally custom build mine to stay on the newest one, but Forge has them available. And then from the master, there's only 24 total Moose commands. They all start with MFS. So that was one of the nice things about Moose is since it only does, it doesn't have an API that you can write into it. It just does file storage. It keeps it very slim, and there's not a whole ton of commands you got to memorize in order to interact with it well. The CGI, like I said, install the RPM, set up your web access. Easy enough. Metalogger, so he's the other side of your UCARP. Install his RPM and set up the Metalogger to say, hey, this guy's a Metalogger. Go talk to this master server to capture the data. And then you're going to copy the master and exports file over. So if it takes over, it has all the same configurations. Chunk server, install RPM. Configure, say, hey, you're going to be a chunk server. Who are you talking to for your master? And then this is the important files. This tells it what all your directory storage is going to be. So it's just line after line. It's pretty easy. Moose client, you just got one RPM. It uses Fuse. There's a command called MFS mount, then that talks through Fuse. And configure your etcfs tab to auto mount it. This is an example of the Moose read. So now that we've got our cluster set up and configured, this is how your clients are going to read data. It's going to talk to the master, and then the master comes back and says, hey, go talk to these chunk servers. And then the client goes and talks to the chunk servers and brings the data back. Moose write gets a little more complicated. Where do you want to write the data? The master tells the chunk, hey, you guys are going to get data written to you. And then tells the client, hey, save the data on these chunk servers. So you go to step four, it writes the data. Now, 5 and 6, this is something that is quite new that I ran into. We started running virtualized machines on this. So we've got some large disk drives of like 100 gig. Well, once you put the 100 gig on there, Moose wants to replicate that data before it gives you a success. So 100 gig of data takes a long time. And it's not wire speed that causes it to be slow. Moose is intentionally written to not have your replicas overwhelm your data backend. Because if you have one drop out, you don't want that replication to kill your front-end app that's using that backend storage. So it intentionally limits that. Now, that is configurable in the configuration files, but you still, I've knocked it up a little bit just because of our usage, but it still takes like, I'm gonna say 12 or 14 hours for 100 gigs to be replicated 3 times. So it takes a while, and the annoying part is, so I can't utilize that storage. So even though it's been written once, I still can't create that VM until after it's done replicating. So it does make sure that, hey, we've got enough copies of that before it tells the client success on that write. We're gonna go over the CGI, which is a little more interesting as far as what information is shown. So this is an example of one of our clusters. You can see it's got a bunch of different tabs at the top, and then this is the default info view. Tells you your version, RAM usage, total space available, overall available space, trash space. And then what's real important is here in the center, this is your valid copies of all your data. So zero line is stuff that's going to be getting deleted. And then as you can see, I've got 3 different goal sets for our folders. So if you were to see if one of our nodes were to go offline, you would see numbers jump up in the columns below those 3 green ones, and they would all go to yellow, from top to bottom. One would be endangered, and then yellow, saying, hey, you only have 1 copy left. That's endangered. Need to be real concerned about these files. And what will happen then is those numbers then will start cranking down slowly as it starts copying those files off. Now, what Moose does in the new .27, this is one of the reasons I wanted to make sure I got on that version, is it actually takes those endangered files in the one column and puts those at a higher replication priority. So it knows, hey, I only have one copy of this. Even the ones with two and three are better off than these ones, so let's get these going. So those you'll see cranking along a lot faster than the other two. But this is a good status to see the overall cluster. And then chunk operations and file system check info, those are just loops that it does, constant checksumming and verification that everything looks good. List of all your servers, quick, tell you the host name, IP, port, version. It's a good way to, if you're doing a rolling upgrade, you can make sure all your versions are correct. Total amount of space used, total available, percentage, and then you can see marked for removal, so delete, it'll tell you. And then here's where you know, hey, my Metalogger is collecting data and is up to date. Disks, so yeah, this is, and the CGI is, that's why I like putting it on the master, because you don't have any real setup or anything to do. You just tell it, hey, point, look at your local host. So it collects all this data all on its own through the MFS master process. So there's not any configuration I had to do for any of this. It just started gathering this data. So in this regard, this is actually every individual hard drive within the Moose cluster. You can see what server it's on, when its last error was. I mean, that I don't put too much stock in, for the simple fact you can have uncorrectable sector errors. I mean, if you ever have a SmartD report in your hard drives, you can see just kind of the general randomness that it'll see. The more important is the status there. It'll say OK or error. Error generally is obviously bad, so it'll then mark that hard drive as bad and start reallocating that data to other hard drives. And then you can get transfer statistics, rewrite fsync, and then you can see you can switch to average, switch to hour and days, number of ops. As you can see, for an overall, I mean, the hard drives are not doing very much at all. That's why I was not worried about IO speed on this, guys, because we just don't push it like that. Then you can see used in total space. CGI exports, this is, like I said, very similar to NFS exports. You can do a full range. We actually do it per IP, just for security, because we don't want anybody on, if anybody were to come into that network segment, then anybody could read the Moose information. So we specify per IP for machine. What their path information is. You can see I've got MFS00 and then scratch space, but then the just root, the slash, that's actually my MFS master. So I've got a copy of the metadata and the master information to the master. So if I need to do anything at the raw file system at the very top level, I can do that from that server. Let's see here. I mean, and then yeah, read write, if it's a restricted IP, yes. You can set your UID and GIDs and trash time. I mean, whole bunch of stuff you can configure there, a lot that we just aren't using. CGI mounts. So this is who's actually mounting the data. As you can see, I need to go through my exports file and clean it up, because I don't have nearly as many servers mounting as I do have available. But this is actually live of who was connected to what mount points, and then where they mount it to. So you can always verify, hey, is this server talking to this without having to jump on that server? CGI just operations, so you can get a ton of operations for each client. So that can tell you is there a server really, really burning up your data storage or anything like that. But this gives you all the data you could even imagine. Like I said, once again, I didn't have to do, this is not SNMP, this is not IOSTAT grepping or anything like that. This is literally just pulled from the Moose master process. Master charts, so you can see a ton of data here. So this is CPU usage, memory usage, chunk deletions, chunk replications. So chunk replications, you can see, hasn't been going on. There's no reason to. But if you were to see a node drop out, you would see that jump up and start really replicating some chunks. And then you can go short range, medium, long, very long. So it keeps some decent historical information to double check. Server charts then, the last tab, shows the same charts, but you can view them in different ways. So you can view the same chart of, say, one of your chunk servers. You think it's acting up. Okay, let's pull up the chunk server of all this data. Or conversely, you can go, I want to see the CPU of all the chunk servers right on top of one another. So you can do a comparison there too. Some of the more basic operations, day-to-day stuff I use. How many total files? This is actually one of our metrics we use at SmartFile. So currently, when I first started this, we had around 5 million files. And today we're around 11 million files. You can't easily just walk a directory to count the number of folders and files. It takes forever. Well, since this is in metadata, I can just run MFS directory info on my root system and it just, bam, spits out a number right there. I mean, it's just as easy as anything else. So that was really beneficial. We actually ran some patches off of the mailing list on our Moose system because it was supposed to give us a little bit more speed. Well, what it gave us was a couple of crashes. So from the crashes, all I had to do was meta restore. So if Moose, the service, doesn't get shut down properly, it doesn't close up those files properly. So then it just gets real upset. So you've got to run the meta restore. It takes on us, so since we're at around 11 million files, it takes about 15 minutes to get that rebuilt up. But once you do that and then start the service, it's running fine again. Master RAM. Moose actually recommends 300 meg per million files. I actually suggest around 450 meg. That is because the hourly flush of the metadata from the RAM to the log files is kind of a beating on the I/O. So if you got more RAM there, it never gets into swap or anything like that. Master and Metalogger, make sure your hardware is identical. So if you fail over, you're not going from 8 gigs of RAM down to 2. It's not going to be happy at that point. Some of the running load observations I've made, like I said, master is a big I/O hit every hour due to the metadata flush. It is what it is. Just you've got to increase your underlying I/O in order to get those flushed out faster. Chunk servers consume low resources even during replication. So you could conceivably run a master and a metalogger on your actual chunk servers themselves because the chunk servers don't do much as it is. So that's always an option too. Chunk servers, they need a dedicated file system. We do a dedicated file system per hard drive. So if you look at the etcfs tab on one of our chunk servers, you'll see a line per hard drive that's in there. If you don't do that, say you pointed it to its own OS, what happens is you get a lot of it doesn't count that storage space that's already on that drive because it's not part of the metadata. So you're gonna start getting conflicting file storage information from the master and from the chunk servers. And then replication is auto magic. It always works. I've yet to force it to fail, and I've broke it in so many ways during testing, and then we've got it in our beta environment. So taking beta up and down, obviously beta always is the runts of the hardware and everything. So you know that poor stuff just doesn't get the love it needs. So, and I've never lost any data out of beta or anything like that. It always has replicated up, always deleted when needed. So it's very, very reliable. Last point is, so got that running, very happy with it. I'm now using Moose to back up my Livevert D VMs, and works so far. I'm pretty happy with it. They're not doing any, there's no databases. So we're talking like web servers and FTP servers, worker and consumers type servers. So not running into any hotspots, not lost any data. It's just been very reliable and running very good for us. So we've been running that for about 6 months now, and slowly migrating machines over to it. So we should be finishing up with that hopefully this year to get everything on the back end, because backups of your data is always awesome. And that's That's Moo's file system and how SmartFile uses it. Any questions? It does, yeah. I mean, that's actually, yeah, what happens. But in the very beginning, I didn't even know that's how Moose would have worked.
Does Moose split up the files, or are they always?
So Moose creates what they call chunk data. Those are 64 megs of data that the file does get split into. So when the client says, hey, I want a read request from the master goes, okay, talk to servers 1, 3, and 5 for that data. And you're never going to hit, yeah, one server with one hard drive. That's how we get around the, well, how do you what happens if you saturate your back-end chunk servers? Well, it doesn't happen that way because that data is literally scattershotted across all those drives. Yes. No, unfortunately, the only way to run like an iSCSI or Samba or anything is to re-export that stuff. It's kind of sucky, but it is what it is. So, not that I've seen. The next big thing on their roadmap is mass automating the master failover, doing a better job than just throwing UCARP on there. Because, I mean, UCARP gets the job done, but if you ever used it, it's kind of dirty and a little rough around the edges, so it's definitely a one-way type thing.
So you said you weren't using any databases, but is there a problem with that?
No, not yet. In fact, one of the things we're going to be doing is I've got a database I'm going to be migrating to Moose. So I'm very, very excited to see how it runs because the database actually is pretty I/O intensive and has actually kind of slowed us down on the application front end. So one of the things I'm looking forward to doing is getting that on Moose and seeing what kind of performance benefits we get from that. Yes?
64 meg chunks seems awfully large.
Yes, it is.
Is there a way to adjust that?
It's hard-coded into the base code. Mm-hmm. So yeah, any file size under 64 meg, yeah, you're wasting a little bit of space, but until you get up to like, what did I see? The calculation was you had to go really, really large in order to really be impacted by it.
Could you store multiple files on one chunk?
No. Nope.
Does a read come from one chunk?
Well, since the chunk servers has, since that data is split up, it's going to come from multiple chunk servers. So that so you take a 100 meg file, break it up into 264 meg chunks, it has to read from two different servers that are hosting that data.
Right, but is it going to read all from one and then all from the other?
It'll read 64 from one and then 64 from the other.
Sequentially.
Mm-hmm. Because the master tells your client how to retrieve that data. But you're talking about almost idle spindles that it's hitting against. Because that data is so split up amongst all the servers. Now, yes, conceivably, once we get to a certain load, I mean, yeah, you could start seeing a little bit of contention, but that's admittedly not something that we've ran into yet. Yes?
How far can Moose scale to?
I know, so on their website, they've got clients that have said, like, I want to say 4 or 5 petabytes that they have marketed / put up on their site to say, hey, this is how big of clusters we're running. I've never read a limit on Moose. I mean, I'm sure there is. They used to have actually in the last few revisions, like between .20 and .24, they had a 2 terabyte file limit. But that's since been done away with, and now it's just the OS.
It sounds like the limitation will be a function of the master server.
Right, exactly. For total number of files, right? Because size of the files doesn't matter. It's strictly the number of files for the metadata. So, mm-hmm. And I have actually, I mean, since we've gone from 5 million files to 11 million, I have had to bump that RAM up a couple times to keep that. Because, yeah, as soon as you don't have enough RAM, it starts hitting that swap bad on those hourly dumps. Yes?
Going back to your 64 meg chunk comment, so say you have, like, you know, 3 or 4, just, like, 5K text files or something.
Still 64. Now, so let me take a step back here. The 64 meg chunk size is what it stores on the chunk servers. When you start talking about communication, it's actually 64 KB total when you include the protocol and all the overhead. So you're not actually reading, I may have misunderstood the question earlier. You're not actually reading 64 meg trying to pump that across your pipe. It's actually 64K that it's doing. So you've got a little bit of network overhead there, yes, which, yeah, you can run into with real small files. So the 64 meg is block, is, it's not block, but it's storage blockage, storage blocks there, and then the 64K is actually communication size.
Okay, so once it reaches, say, the end of that text file, though, it then wouldn't need to continue transferring
any of the rest of the 64? It would read the five, and then put the overhead on top of it and send that. But then from a storage perspective, it still sees that as 64 megabytes. Correct, exactly.
What network protocols are run on, TCP or UDP?
TCP.
Are you having any of the problems that you have when you use NFS over TCP?
I haven't seen any. We've been running this setup in production for over a year now. And other than the needing to up the RAM, I've not had any problem. I mean, any actual problems other than just general maintenance. Hey, a hard drive failed.
Because what happens with NFS is it opens a kernel thread for each one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you get too much traffic, it starts, processes die, but the kernel threads don't die.
Mm-hmm. And we ran into that with the old NFS server. So once again, another reason why we needed a new distributed file system. So, and I've not seen that error again since we moved off of NFS. And we actually, so we had the four boxes with the NFS, DRBD, all that good stuff, and then four of these Moose boxes that we were running side by side before we started migrating customer data. And yeah, the NFS, those poor NFS boxes just kept having problems, so we started moving more and more data. And
we had
zero
problems until we figured out that UDP worked so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yes? That's per file and or directory, so it's more of a file system type structure, like a directory structure flow. So you can set whatever. Let's say you've got a master folder that has two, then a folder under that has four, and then you're like, oh, this is a real important file, a single file underneath that. You could set to five or six. And then it's got recursive too. So I mean, it's not like once you do a whole bunch of files or directories and go, oh man, I need to get additional replicas for it, you can just add recursive and it just throws them all out. One of the things they are working on too is, how can I explain it? The concept of racks in a data center. So let's say you've got three racks in a data center. You can tell Moose, hey, these servers are in these racks, these servers are in these racks, these servers are in these racks. And it starts making sure your data replications are spread amongst your racks also. So you can spread it out that way also.
Well, keep you from saturating the link to the cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or lose power to an entire rack, exactly. Yes?
Can I ask you a question about your implementation?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep, we've got layer 3 HP switches, all just copper gigi, and then we're running dual gigi back up to the switches, one to each switch for failover.
Per server? Oh, for failover, not bonded?
Not bonded right now. We might bond, but I mean, they're so under, those links are so underutilized right now. It's, yes. Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason to do that over, say, using LVM and just exporting a single partition?
No. Just the reason I did it that way is it made deployment easier. So I've got a script that goes in and reads all the hard drives, throws out the smallest one, and says, okay, the rest of these drives are Moose drives. What do you mean? I mean, like with an if LVM increases its size, if the Moose service was restarted, yes, it would read that additional data. That's just like swapping out a 2 terabyte for a 3 terabyte drive. Moose doesn't care what it is, just as long as it can see what data is available on it. So, did you have a question back there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mhm. Just over the fuse mount for MFS. Mhm. Yep. Yep. Mhm. Mhm. Like I said, we're running probably about half our environment on there right now. Just no database servers yet. I haven't got up the gumption to pull that trigger. Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're reading different chunks from different hosts.
Yes.
And then they're replicating the data back the other way across the host.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to balance that so that they write locally for the machine that they're above? The disks that are closest to them, that they take a priority to finish the write?
Not that I know of. With our setup, it's just the two redundant switches. So, I mean, it's just one hop regardless. But not something I really looked that close into.
You're spanning two cabinets with one switch, right?
Not yet. We're still in one cabinet right now. But we can span into the second cabinet because we've got the 48 ports are available. I've read where people have done that, and they haven't ran into any issues. I haven't decided if we want to do that or just do like an rsync for specific client directories, but it's just TCP traffic at that point. So just like any other site-to-site replication, what's going to be your limiting factors, your pipe there, and how far behind you're going to get based on how much data you can push through that pipe. Yes?
With the KVM.
Mm-hmm.
Is it treating each KVM as a single file?
Well, each KVM has a single file, the .img disk, but then it's still splitting that up into 64 meg chunks across all the disks.
So even though you're running this virtual machine, it can be spread across
all the
machines or whatever.
All the chunk servers on the back end. Mm-hmm. And with the size of those files, I would have to imagine that it really is running on every single chunk server. Any additional questions?
No speed hit.
No, I've not seen any speed hit. Yes?
Is it possible to mount a fuse mount on one of the chunk servers being exported?
There's no reason you couldn't. That's effectively what I'm doing with the master when I mount the root to the master so I can get to the metadata. Which is important to do undeletes and snapshots and stuff like that. So yeah, there's as long as you have the client RPM installed, it's fine. It just talks to the master just like normal and then comes back. Any additional questions? No? All right, well, I appreciate everybody listening to me blather on here. And if you have any additional questions or just want to chat about our setup, we're a full open source setup, so we use Puppet, Foreman, MariaDB, CentOS, about the general infrastructures. Come by our little booth and we can chat. But otherwise, I appreciate your time and enjoy the rest of your day today.